Hello, my name is Chip Lang, and you are listening to Total EM. We are going to talk about COVID-19 vaccinations, and this could be a really long and detailed podcast, but I wanted to keep it relatively brief to act as a primer, if you will. And we've talked about COVID-19 quite a bit before. In fact, as I was going through and looking at how often we talked about it 10 times before. So now with our 11th podcast on COVID-19, we're going to talk about the vaccinations. And this could be, again, a very long one, but I wanted to keep it relatively brief. But what I did do was that I actually made sure to include a lot of show notes and stuff like that and tie into other studies and whatnot. So that way, if you want to get a lot more information, you can go there and find all this out. Currently, there are 8 vaccines at least that I could find that are being researched and or produced. And the main 2 that we know about, at least here in the United States, are the Pfizer-BioNTech one and the Moderna vaccines. And these vaccines have been incredible as far as what technology they use and how it's changed things. And there's a great infographic that talks about how those 2 work versus the others. The thing is that these require like very, very cold refrigeration. In fact, ultra freezing is sometimes how it's referred. These are requiring temperatures as low as negative 70 degrees Celsius, which is so cold that, again, this is not going to be practical in some parts of the world, and you may need something that's going to require just basic refrigeration, which is where other vaccines that are using an inactivated virus versus using the mRNA type vaccine technology is making a huge difference here. And we're going to notice this more and more. I believe that we're going to start seeing the viral vector inactivated virus type vaccines going out there. And you're going to see that again in probably more rural environments and more of those that are underdeveloped. But it is also being used in the UK and other parts of the world that would be considered traditionally more developed. Again, we're seeing more right now the mRNA vaccines, thanks to those being produced so quickly and so readily. And most of these vaccines, we're talking about 2 doses that are being used. There are in some cases a 1 dose or even 3 dose scheme that's being developed. But traditionally, we're talking about 2 doses that are anywhere from usually 3 or 4 weeks apart for those 2 doses. Now, most of these have some sort of US connection, but there are also other countries in Europe that are working on vaccines, as well as one that comes out of China. That will be very interesting to see how these all work as far as efficacy. But it seems like overall, the best efficacy comes from the mRNA vaccines, where we're talking about 94-95% type of efficacy. And what we're talking about there with that, say, 95%, like we're seeing with Pfizer, is that when 100 people were sick in the placebo group, only 5 of them were sick in the treated group. But again, we're going to be able to see more and more with time as more people get vaccinated. Does this hold true? In general, the consensus was that if we can find a vaccine that's 50% effective, that'd be fantastic. So to start seeing these really high numbers is really reassuring. The Oxford AstraZeneca type vaccine, now with the way it was set up and approved, only had a 62% efficacy, but we're finding that with different dosing regimens, it could be as high as 90%. And we have other vaccines like the ones coming out of Russia that's reportedly about 91% effective, but the data hasn't been fully published yet. So we're not going to know fully until we can see that data. But we do know from the 2 mRNA vaccines that they are highly effective and they are very safe. You may be asking yourself, okay, you talk about safety here, but what do you actually mean? People get concerned because they feel like these vaccines were developed too quickly. And in reality, they really haven't been. A big part of this is due to the technology that was developed decades in advance, especially over the last decade. mRNA technology has been there. And this is the first time to really get to employ it in mass. But also keep in mind that the reason why we have such big studies is because of how widespread it is to start with. When you're talking about vaccines for, say, Ebola, you have very small numbers that you're working with, and it's hard to get the large enough trials that you need to be able to show that. And with other vaccines, with other infectious diseases, it can take decades to finish. But because of the high prevalence of COVID-19 right now, we're able to develop these vaccines quickly and in large enough numbers that we can safely find not only its efficacy, but its overall safety as far as the effects go. And some people are concerned about, you know, longer term complications and stuff like that, for which I understand. But most of these complications show up within the first couple of days and they're very minor overall. Some are a little more significant. Every now and then you hear about someone who's developed anaphylaxis, and sometimes that's because they already had a previous issue with anaphylaxis, or because every now and then people will develop new cases of anaphylaxis. But the other thing that comes up that people really miss and miss the big point here is that vaccines, when you're talking about looking for complications and side effects and stuff like that, it all shows up within the first 6 weeks. It's extremely rare to see vaccine-related complications more than 6 weeks after the initial vaccine. So when we're talking about someone who has received these vaccines and it's been several months since that was done, when we're talking about the trials and whatnot, these people, if they don't have complications, it's extremely unlikely to have complications that would be related to the vaccine in the first place. There are other concerns that come up. So some people are concerned about the side effects and the effects and whatnot, but this is something that's blown out of proportion. Again, you're going to have, like any other shot, we're going to have some localized pain, and that is pretty normal. But you're also talking about some other things that you can see as well, body aches, fevers, headaches, whatnot. I will talk about anecdotally for a second, my own personal experience. The first vaccine, I had a little bit of a sore arm, and I can tell you that was uncomfortable, but I didn't think much of it. It went away in about a day or so. The second one, about 4 hours after I got my vaccine, it felt like someone gave me the worst dead arm of my life, and it was very uncomfortable, but it wasn't terrible. And then slowly over the next 24 or so hours, I had body aches and some very mild headaches and just, you know, was uncomfortable. But I knew that, hey, the good news is my body's actually doing something here. We're getting an immune response. That's what I want to see. Again, it doesn't feel the best, but what I did was I took some acetaminophen and ibuprofen and felt a whole lot better. Once I finally took them, which I waited a little bit because I waited until the symptoms were enough that it really did bother me, that I went ahead and took the dose. I mean, within 30 minutes, I felt completely better. But again, this is all anecdotal, but some people have been asking very specifically, very pointedly, what types of symptoms did I have and what did I feel? And this is pretty similar to a lot of my colleagues. Some people had no side effects whatsoever, not even a sore arm. Others had even worse side effects than me. But generally, the vast majority of people had either similar or lesser side effects than I experienced. And like I said, acetaminophen, ibuprofen afterwards, it was very helpful. But some people are asking about, okay, well, why don't I just pre-treat myself? And this is where there's some caution. I will admit that there is very, very weak evidence here because we don't have evidence specifically for COVID-19. We're talking about other types of vaccines, but there is some evidence and some signal out there that acetaminophen and or NSAIDs like ibuprofen could potentially, mainly with pretreatment, lower antibody concentrations. And this has been seen in studies such as one from 2009 that was published in The Lancet that's worth checking out, again, in the show notes. But there are other studies that kind of demonstrate the same thing. So probably avoid pretreatment because that could lower our antibody levels. Post-treatment, maybe not as big a deal. It doesn't really seem like there's much there to point to that. Additionally, sleep seems to be important. I mean, always sleep is important, right? We always need to have high quality sleep, but realistically, it can be really hard. So we want to focus in on time where we can have good, effective sleep. And once again, this is not COVID-19 vaccine specific, but we have seen in studies such as ones with college students who have received influenza vaccines and those who had insomnia versus those didn't. We also had a hepatitis A vaccination where they kept people up the first night, basically pulled an all-nighter, and those who didn't. And then another one where there's sleep duration and predicting hepatitis B antibody levels after receiving vaccination. All these pointed towards the fact that more sleep seemed to be better. So there's some signal that's going on there that, again, If you sleep some more, not only will you probably get some additional rest and your body can heal and recover a little bit better, but also to develop those all-important antibodies. So again, probably avoid pre-medication and really focus on trying to get some extra rest after you receive these vaccines. Let's go ahead and talk about some other kind of myths and facts and what to work out here. So some people are concerned that COVID-19 vaccines will give you COVID-19. That's not the case, especially with the mRNA one. You're not getting anything besides the spike protein. And that then leads to the concern of, you know, this will alter and change my DNA. That's not the case. That's not how this works. This is a poor understanding of immunology and how our body works. And what really happens with mRNA is messenger RNA. And it does not interact at all with DNA. DNA makes mRNA as part of what is being produced, but it doesn't directly contact or talk with DNA. Instead, mRNA is triggering an immune response that produces the antibodies, and then the mRNA is broken down by the cells. So this is something that is a non-issue. Another one that comes up that's a non-issue is infertility and miscarriage with the COVID-19 vaccine. There's nothing besides stuff that was clearly a hoax and something that was very destructive in nature, because it's really been widespread and rampant, was that there was concerns that it caused infertility or miscarriages, and that's not the case. So again, this is something that's a huge misunderstanding. The other couple of ones that I want to point out here is that the COVID-19 vaccine can really help protect a wide variety of strains and may indeed, at least theoretically, actually be better than, say, natural infection or what is called like wild type exposure. So basically someone who gets it from community spread, it's actually probably better antibodies that you're going to get from the vaccine versus what you would get from natural exposure, which people talk about all the way back since like chickenpox and whatnot about being exposed that way you had your own immune response. But keep in mind, COVID-19 has some real complications. People think like the high survivability rate, which is true compared to certain types of other illnesses, but you know, locally, from the numbers I looked at just the other day, we were still seeing 3% case fatality rate, incredibly high when you think about how many people get COVID-19. But it's not just about fatality. And this is something I've talked about before, but it's not just about fatality. It's about the complications that occur long term, even short term, where I've seen people who are young, healthy, otherwise doing just fine, get hit with COVID-19. And now they have a massive pulmonary embolism, or they have myocarditis or some other devastating complication. This is something that can be a very big deal. And that leads to people thinking that, oh, well, if I get the vaccine, then I don't have to take any measures. But that's not true either, because the vaccine is not going to be perfectly effective, which is why herd immunity is so important. The more people who get vaccinated, the more we can protect one another, because the vaccine, just because I have great antibody levels, doesn't mean that I couldn't still get sick, or potentially that I couldn't spread it to someone else, because asymptomatic transmission could still be a thing that's going on. Ultimately, though, what we're finding is that these vaccines are very safe and effective and work quite well. And something that people are concerned about is, okay, we don't actually know what's in the COVID-19 vaccine. And that's not the case. In fact, when I got my vaccines, the pamphlet was given to me as far as like what was in it and what to expect from it, and was pretty detailed. It listed all the ingredients in it. And that's typical. But this whole like crap about microchips and other tracking things is just false. I will tell you, I'm a little bit disappointed, maybe jokingly, about how my internet and my cell reception, because anyone who's talked to me knows that I have terrible cell reception. So I joke about like, nope, it didn't improve. I didn't get the right one then. But in reality, again, this is something that's very serious, very important. And these vaccines can truly change how we approach COVID-19 from here. This is a big deal. This is something that's been in the works. And this is something that if we actually all got our vaccines, we could potentially curb this to such a degree that we're talking about the true end of this pandemic. And hopefully for those of you who are listening, who are maybe a little hesitant, this will help at least address some of your questions and concerns. If there's enough questions and follow-up, I could potentially have a follow-up podcast on this. I meant to keep this relatively short, which it looks like I am, and I'm very happy with that. But until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.